Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Some Christians wonder if boycotting businesses is really biblical, and that's a fair question. Ed Vitagliano and M.D. Perkins address that subject in depth in the AFA Cultural Institute video, Stewardship in Action, The Power of the Boycott. They share the purpose of boycotts and show how they can impact the culture. We're giving that DVD to you free as our thanks for supporting AFA this month. Go to AFA.net today for more details. AFA.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Monday, October 6th, and in the midst of a week that is seeing the second anniversary of the October 7th terror attack on Israel, the conservative world, I think, was a little bit rocked when last week President Trump extended a U.S. security guarantee to Qatar, elevating the Gulf ally to near NATO status. That's the headline from Fox News. It says the executive order pledges military defense for Arab ally that mediates Gaza ceasefire talks. So President Trump signed that order Monday, offering a U.S. guarantee for Qatar's security, a significant commitment for the rising non-NATO Arab ally. A quote from the order is, the United States shall regard any armed attack on the territory, sovereignty, or critical infrastructure of the state of Qatar as a threat to the peace and security of the United States. In the event of such attack, the United States shall make all lawful and appropriate measures, including diplomatic, economic, and if necessary, military, to defend the interests of the United States and of the state of Qatar to restore peace and stability. So according to Fox News, the guarantee represented a level of support typically offered only to Washington's closest allies. It came after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu apologized to Qatari Emir Tani for a September 9th Israeli strike on his territory. The strike was targeted at Hamas but killed one Qatari security official in the process. So very interesting developments here. Let's welcome in David Brody, who is the chief political analyst for CBN News. David, what did you make of this executive order and the situation that the United States is now in?
Well, a couple of things, and good morning, Jenna. There's a lot to unpack here. First of all, I think we have to do the disclaimer at the top. I mean, Trump, this president, and Israel, I mean, he's got Israel's back. Okay, so I don't think there's any question about that. He's proven that, and he doesn't have to continue to prove it, though in a way he does, right? Having said that, what in the world? I mean, look, I'm barely good at playing 3D chess. Actually, I can't even play chess, but maybe 3D chess. But this apparently is, what, 10-dimensional art of the deal chess? I mean, I get the idea here that, he's friendly with the Qataris and the millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars coming in from Qatar and the whole art of the deal and what he's done over there. I get that. And I also get the idea that, you know, we need Qatar here to help negotiate an end to the war here with Hamas. Having said that, this is a few bridges too far. I mean, military backing, American blood potentially shed for in defense of Qatar makes absolutely no sense, and it's not America first. So that is just a non-starter. And then you put on top of that, that, let's be honest, Jenna, it was an embarrassing photo that the White House released of Bibi calling the Emir of Qatar there to apologize. I mean, just the body language, the whole thing was just ugly. So you put all that together, and of course it comes on the heels of the Qatari plane that they're gifting to the president, you know, the new Air Force One. You just go down the list, and you just got to wonder, what in the world? And I get it, he's unconventional, but this is not just unconventional. This is not America first whatsoever, Jenna.
Yeah, it isn't, and I completely agree with you on that. David Brody, my special guest this morning, who's the chief political analyst for CBN News, and it raises, I mean, a number of questions, but especially why now? I mean, what events or pressures likely motivated President Trump to issue this guarantee at this moment?
Well, I think he, as in President Trump, believes he's on the cusp of this, quote, great deal between Hamas and Israel and to end the war. And I think he sees it within his grasp where he'll get the credit. And once again, I want to be clear, he wants peace, and he's got broader, aspirational goals for the region. But, you know, he saw something once again that was to his liking, and he saw that there was going to be a potential deal here, and he didn't want anything to blow it. And I think that's a big part of it. But Jenna, you know, quite frankly, this goes beyond Qatar. I mean, you know, in this Gaza plan for peace, I mean, he's the governor or the president of the Board of Peace. I mean, what in the world? I mean, if Biden was the president of the Board of Peace, would we not just be outraged over that? And we would be chanting globalism from the rooftops? I mean, there's this international stabilization force that I understand will be pretty much made up of Arab nations, but let's be honest, it's in Trump's peace plan, and America will have a say in that international stabilization force if it comes to fruition. So, I mean, you throw all of that in, plus, I mean, we haven't obviously talked about the fact that he's telling Netanyahu how you absolutely will not be annexing any land in the air quote West Bank, because we know it's Judeo-Samaria. So, I mean, you know, just all of this just feels very, I'll be honest with you, filthy. It just feels filthy, and it feels wrong. All for what? Well, I guess all for peace is the way President Trump and the White House will say. All for a deal, if you will. But, you know, at the same time, it just, the way this has been going down just feels, doesn't feel right at all.
And I think that you and other conservatives are very wise to question this and to, at very bare minimum, kind of raise an eyebrow and want to know from the White House and from President Trump, you know, really what this is all about. But interestingly, and you and I discussed this over the weekend offline, David, that, you know, it seems like a lot of the main America First players and especially influencers really didn't even mention this. I mean, this should be a lot bigger news. Places like Fox News should be talking about it more, not just, you know, having this kind of headline that's a little bit more reporting than opinion. I mean, nobody is really looking at the truth behind not only globalism, which is obviously a really big issue, and it shouldn't just be, well, if President Trump's for it, then we're for it. It should be, we have principles and standards that raise the same questions, whether it's President Trump or anyone else doing it. That's what it means to be a conservative, and especially what it means to be a Christian. But then for Qatar specifically, I mean, we know that it uses billions of dollars to infiltrate Western universities, shaping anti-freedom narratives. It funds Islamic networks and clerics that suppress Christianity and glorify extremism. I mean, it's spending literally billions of dollars influencing Western education and the media, especially with the rise of Al Jazeera and other networks. I mean, this is something that is, I think, one of the key points of threatening the West right now. And while the America First kind of podcast bros are sitting here, you know, raising the five alarm about America supporting an ally in Israel, when our principles and our values, I mean, Western culture wouldn't exist without Israel. They don't seem to care about the threat that Qatar poses, and especially now this executive order that's guaranteeing protection.
Yeah, and let me just do it, all right? I'll just go there. I'll call out names. Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, and so many others. Where are you on this? And I think it goes to something the audience needs to really all of us understand, which is the word credibility. I mean, if you're going to, and I'm not talking about your audience specifically, I'm just saying overall, if we're going to start ingesting news sources and starting to believe some of the commentators, fine. But if we're going to do that, let's make sure they're having a holistic, if you will, approach. In other words, the whole 360. I mean, you've got to have credibility at the end of the day. If you're not calling out Qatar, but you're calling out Israel, what does that say about your commentary and, more importantly, your facts? And I think that's a major concern. So, you know, look, I may agree with Tucker Carlson 80% of the time, but when it comes to Israel, obviously he's clearly off the reservation. And the fact that he won't talk about Qatar at all suggests to me that, you know, you need to maybe look elsewhere to get an unbiased point of view, if you will.
Yeah, and I think that's really well said, that we need to, as conservatives, always look at, and especially Christians, we always need to look at voices that are prominent and that say and allege that they're conservative, but always check that and perspectives against not only reality, but also fundamentally against Western values that are derived from the Judeo-Christian worldview. I mean, the faith built the West, and the fact that the America First as a movement and the MAGA base as a whole is shifting a little bit toward this anti-Semitism, but then embracing Qatar, I think is a really dangerous viewpoint, especially for the rising Gen Z voting bloc, who maybe doesn't understand how America First doesn't mean America only.
Well, that's right. And let's be honest. I mean, Qatar is giving free passage to Hamas. We know this. That's obvious. I mean, it's right out there in front. So beyond just all of what the Western influence has been in terms of the Qatari money. And I should mention, too, that Ted Cruz has just come out and said that he believes there is a link between Qatar and Antifa. And this is a United States senator saying that. So and that I'll have to be looked into more closely. But, you know, you've got free passage for Hamas. And so the whole thing just feels just really it's not a good situation at all. And let's be clear. I mean, look, I've interviewed President Trump now close to 30 times or so. You know, I'm close with a lot of folks inside that White House. But I have to call it out when I see it, and call it analysis, call it whatever you want. But it's the truth. And when I say the truth is a full spectrum here of what's going on. And in terms of the full spectrum, let's also be clear. Yes, of course he has Israel's back. I mean, look what happened to Iran and their nuclear sites and what happened there. I mean, what a bold move by the president. I can go over, we can spend hours and hours talking about President Trump's bold moves towards Israel. So he's a supporter of Israel. There's no doubt about it. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about specifically is some of the concerns as it relates to the America First agenda squaring with what he's doing over there. We haven't even talked about Argentina and some of the bailouts that he's giving his friend down there, the president of Argentina. Why in the world? How is that America First? So, I mean, it's just been a different 2.0 with Trump this time around. Some very good, some very different than the first time around, Jenna.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with David Brody, who is the chief political analyst for CBN News. And I'm glad that you and a few others are willing to call this out. And you were speaking about, you know, the kind of the 2.0 versus the first administration and how Trump is building a network of allies under the auspices of peace. But, you know, this seems to be in conflict, even though I know he's trying to broker this deal, but this seems to be in conflict to have, you know, Qatar and their Islamic values that are directly opposed to the United States in particular, but especially with our ally Israel. And you have to ask the question as well. Where is this influence and money as well coming from? You mentioned the Qatari gift plane and all of that. There's been so much in the media suggesting that, you know, the United States needs to stop being such a strong financial backer of Israel. But what about the Qatari funding and influence spending in the United States? I mean, coming that way, it seems like there's not enough that's being talked about in the influence spending in the United States that's enormous, including military, university, and media investments. I mean, if we're worried, you know, we being kind of the conservative base are worried about, you know, DOGE over expenditures, I haven't heard the conversation talking about the other way and the money and the influence specifically from Qatar that's coming into the United States that may affect our foreign policy.
Yeah, and we won't. And it won't come from this administration, because with President Trump, his lens is always the art of the deal. And he needs Qatar, in his view, to be part of a team here that brokers peace. But it's not just Qatar. I mean, you can talk to, you look at Saudi Arabia, the same dynamic applies there. And as it relates specifically to Qatar, of course, we have that base there, the military base there in Qatar, which is crucial. So, look, I get the geopolitical stuff, right? I do. I just think it comes back down to that executive order when he actually said militarily as well, potentially defending Qatar. That is a bridge too far. I mean, that is NATO language, language that he doesn't even really want to do to begin with NATO. So the whole thing just doesn't make any sense. And it's just been frustrating to see. Once again, you know, upgrade over Biden, obviously upgrade over Biden. But this is a whole different ball of wax, if you will. And I'll just say one last thing. And here's another concern. Deadline after deadline, right? How many times have we heard President Trump? I mean, let's be honest, Jenna. In January of 2025, when he was being inaugurated, he said a month before that, he said, if all of the hostages are not released by the time I'm inaugurated, there will be, quote, hell to pay. He said hell to pay back in March if all the hostages aren't released. Now here we have Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern deadline. Hell to pay, it's over. You know, and it's Sunday, 6 p.m. has passed. And we don't have a deal. We kind of have a deal. We may have a deal. We don't know what kind of deal we have. So once again, you know, where is the credibility behind some of what he is saying?
Yeah, those are all great questions, and we've got to leave our questions for now there. David Brody, already at the end of our segment here, but I really appreciate you being willing to raise these questions. I think this is a huge issue of concern. This needs to be one of the biggest headlines this week, and if the commentators and the media that people are listening to are not raising these questions and they're not asking with a critical eye toward the administration, because we should always critique and analyze what our leaders are doing, and we're not raising these questions specifically about Qatar, the executive order, then you have to ask, you know, are there other motivations, or just, you know, perhaps other funding, you know, to some of these other for-profit, you know, MAGA-related organizations and commentators. So we need to continue following this story. But David Brody, really appreciate it. Where can people find you and your work on CBN and elsewhere?
Sure. Just I would go to D. Brody Reports, D. Brody Reports, and you can find me on all the social media handles there and take it from there.
All right. Well, that's where I first saw this executive order, and that sparked this conversation is because you're such a great reporter and posted that on your social media. So everyone should follow David Brody on X, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because Preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now, multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies Preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers Preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year. And they can't do that without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound, the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center has now getting kind of a well-deserved death knell, as we could say, with FBI Director Kash Patel posting on X, the Southern Poverty Law Center long ago abandoned civil rights work and turned into a partisan smear machine. Their so-called quote-unquote hate map has been used to defame mainstream Americans and even inspired violence. That disgraceful record makes them unfit for any FBI partnership. In April, during our anti-Christian bias panel, I made it clear that the FBI will never rely on politicized or agenda-driven intelligence from outside groups, and certainly not from the SPLC. Under this FBI, all ties with the SPLC have officially been terminated. He also posted a screenshot from reporter Tyler O'Neill that talks about this. And so Tyler O'Neill, who is the managing editor at the Daily Signal, who wrote that article that Kash Patel posted a screenshot of, joins me now. So this is really good news for conservatives and just simply for truth, Tyler.
Yes. Thanks so much for having me, Jenna. This was a fantastic story to cover because I think it illustrates, you know, setting right so many things that went wrong in the past administration. And this was one of the most egregious things. You know, you had the FBI citing the Southern Poverty Law Center, and it's not just in that one, you know, notorious anti-Catholic memo, but, you know, I've seen multiple documents of, you know, showing the SPLC was advising the Department of Justice, speaking with prosecutors, being considered a reliable source on hate and extremism. And, you know, this is something when the legacy media covered the FBI director's move here, Kash Patel, separating the FBI from the SPLC, they repeatedly referred to the SPLC as a civil rights organization, as a civil rights watchdog, as if it had no scandals, as if it were not. And occasionally, you know, the better of the legacy outlets would say, oh, conservatives criticized them as being biased. But they never admitted that this criticism is not unique to conservatives, that liberals like Nadine Strossen, who is the former president of the ACLU, and Mikey Weinstein, who leads the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which is a secularist group, they've also condemned the SPLC for painting with so broad of a brush that they are, you know, demonizing upstanding, law-abiding, conservative and Christian people for what we stand for what we believe. And you would not get any of that from the legacy media coverage.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating, Tyler, how the leftist media, who has been obviously pushing up the SPLC as if they're some kind of valid organization on civil rights instead of just simply anti-conservative and frankly anti-Christian. They've been saying that, you know, somehow this is just after a MAGA push and this is somehow super partisan without really recognizing what the SPLC really has stood for. And Politico had that main headline, the FBI cuts ties with the Southern Poverty Law Center after MAGA push. And in their second paragraph is talking about Elon Musk called the group a liberal-leaning organization that has for years tracked hate groups and provided law enforcement with information about them, as if like that was somehow, you know, some valid push by the SPLC instead of literally just targeting conservatives and specifically Christians for cancellation and for targeting even from law enforcement simply for viewpoints.
Yeah, I mean, let's make no bones about this. The SPLC gained its reputation by suing Klan groups into bankruptcy, and then they took their Klan Watch program and translated it into a hate map that they now say, if you're on the hate map, you are part of the infrastructure upholding white supremacy in America. This is not subtle. They are comparing mainstream conservative groups like Alliance Defending Freedom, like the Family Research Council, to chapters of the KKK. And this is, you know, this continues to grow. Like they put Moms for Liberty on there. Earlier this year, they put Turning Point USA on there. And then shortly thereafter, you had the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And of course, we don't know if the shooter was at all motivated or inspired by the SPLC. First time that we had a targeted terrorist attack against a group on the SPLC hate map. The first time was in 2012 with the Family Research Council. And then you can make an argument, as I do, that, you know, the 2017 congressional baseball game shooter, he liked the SPLC on Facebook. And the SPLC had repeatedly attacked Steve Scalise, who nearly lost his life in that incident. So, I mean, there are so many different avenues that you can go here. The way that the legacy media is just papering over any sort of real criticism of the SPLC is disgusting, because they also had a racial discrimination and sexual harassment scandal in 2019 where they fired their co-founder and then had a former employee come out and say that they're a highly profitable scam. I mean, and I think that's something many of us who've been watching this know, that they're a highly profitable scam. I mean, they exaggerate hate, and then they have an endowment of $700 million. And, you know, offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands, for some reason we haven't gotten answers to. But this, I mean, this organization is so corrupt, and yet, you know, the FBI was citing it for so long. Thank God they no longer are. But let's not let the legacy media get away with this ridiculous suggestion that this is somehow a, you know, MAGA thought police cancellation sort of thing. This is a long time coming, and this is a step for sanity.
Yes, and I'm speaking with Tyler O'Neill, who's the managing editor at the Daily Signal, and who wrote this piece that was just published on October 3rd in the Daily Signal. The headline there is "Breaking: Kash Patel's FBI Cuts All Ties to Southern Poverty Law Center," and you're absolutely right, Tyler, that this isn't just saying that somehow now the FBI is ignoring hate groups and ignoring, you know, things that they should rightfully be investigating. I mean, this is returning to the norm that the SPLC was wrongfully labeling and targeting groups that they hated or that they disagreed with, and were feeding this information to the FBI. And I don't know that a lot of conservatives who at least were aware of the SPLC and how, you know, these ridiculous labels of hate groups just on Christian and conservative organizations were actually, that the SPLC was actually partnering with the FBI, because we've seen the targeting, you know, of course, of by law enforcement of Christians and conservatives. But what was the background to this, just so we can be very clear, of why the FBI would have been partnering with such a ridiculous organization like the SPLC to begin with?
Yeah, so the partnership goes back for a long time. Actually, one of the reasons, so in 1985, the SPLC's legal team quit en masse, and they were complaining, one, because the SPLC had gone from being a noble civil rights, you know, litigation firm that would represent poor people in the South legally, to starting to go after the Klan all the time. And the lawyers said the Klan was a paper tiger, that it was like shooting fish in a barrel. They signed up to help really good people, not go after the Klan. So that's a very interesting, you know, tiny thing. But the other thing was, they didn't like the fact that the SPLC had started working with law enforcement, tipping off law enforcement. And I mean, back then it was to the activities of the Klan. So, you know, there's a little bit of more justification there, especially considering some of these Klan groups really, I mean, the Klan is the quintessential hate group in the United States. And one of the real reasons why I think it's a really strong defamation case against the SPLC when they put conservatives and Christians on there and say that they're on the same map with the Klan is because that's a comparison that's really noxious, because the Klan is so evil. But, you know, they were feeding information to law enforcement about the Klan, and then they started, you know, expanding their mission. They ran out of grand dragons to slay, and they started putting more mainstream groups on there, and they would feed information to law enforcement about the mainstream groups too. And so this naturally led many in the FBI to dislike the fact that they had this relationship with the SPLC, but it was a decades-long thing, and they'd been feeding things back and forth. And eventually, thankfully, in the first Trump administration, you had an attorney general who was not afraid to stand up and say, we have to cut all ties, and he directed the DOJ to do so. Unfortunately, under the Biden administration, we seem to have a sea change there, and the SPLC is all over DOJ events, doing all sorts of meetings with Kristen Clark, who, let's have our listeners forget, is the lady who brought charges against pro-life protesters for peacefully protesting outside abortion clinics. But, you know, all of this stuff, I think, unfortunately, you see how connected it is. And we have to remind Americans, because apparently the legacy media won't. You know, I wrote the book, Making Hate Pay, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center, because I saw how quickly the left and the media seemed to brush it under the rug that the SPLC had this huge scandal in 2019. Like, even today, I will tell people that, yes, the SPLC was accused of racism and sexual harassment, and they fired their co-founder over this. And people are like, wait, what? I'd never heard of this. And it's because that is so fundamental to, you know, what happened with the SPLC, why the FBI shouldn't be citing them, why big tech and corporate America should not be relying on them as, you know, supposedly a non-biased watchdog. I mean, there are so many problems with this organization that I'm flabbergasted to see the legacy media still trying to cover up these problems.
Yeah, and that book, again, is called Making Hate Pay, and it's an excellent book by Tyler O'Neill. You can get anywhere books are sold. And, you know, this history is so important, Tyler, and I appreciate your work, because especially as we're seeing, you know, the rise, the alarming rise of violence against Christians and conservatives, especially with the assassination of Charlie Kirk, it really does boggle the mind that the left can still be promoting things like the SPLC and promoting this type of targeting of Christians and saying that they're hate groups. I mean, that just encourages kind of this form of violence. So just in the last minute or so, you know, where does the FBI go from here and kind of trying to reverse that and suggesting and really informing the American people? I mean, that's just not how our country works, to just label people hate groups and then have the legacy media just be like, you know, basically they said, well, he had it coming. I mean, so many people said that about Charlie Kirk, which is just absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, yeah, it is horrifying. And we're seeing, you know, similar rhetoric coming out. I mean, the fact that that Virginia Democrats are standing by Jay Jones after these text messages where he called for the deaths of the children of the wife of his political opponent so that his political opponent would change his positions on a policy issue. I mean, it is blood-curdling. And yeah, so I think the SPLC is upstream of a lot of that, and they give a veneer of respectability to this insanity that somehow being a conservative makes you a fascist. But the other thing is, where the federal government can go, they can look at the ties between the SPLC and Antifa. Those are really alarming for me. I have long thought that defamation lawsuits are the main way to hold the SPLC accountable. But if they're doing anything illegal regarding these Antifa riots, that needs to be investigated.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. So Tyler O'Neill, you can follow him at Tyler, the number 2, O'Neill. You can also read his work in the Daily Signal, and he's the author of Making Hate Pay, and also the book The Woketopus, which you really need to read as well. So thanks so much, Tyler, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as today kicks off the Supreme Court's next term, there are a number of cases that are very important, and I'm sure even cases forthcoming that we will be covering throughout this session that we'll get to in a moment. But meanwhile, a Biden judge spent 7 hours last week justifying a shocking 22-year downward departure from sentencing guidelines for the man who attempted to kill Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, at one point saying she was glad the crime made his mom accept his transgender identity. That was the report from Luke Rosiak, who is the government efficiency reporter at The Daily Wire. And this coming from that article in more than an hour-long speech justifying the light sentence. This judge said that this individual came out to herself. It's really him, right? But obviously they're buying into this this transgender nonsense. So this individual came out as transgender in 2020, but kept it a secret. His sister came out as gay 2 years prior, but this individual saw that his parents struggled to reconcile his sexual identity with their religious beliefs. And so actually said, quote, "I am heartened that this terrible infraction has helped the family accept their daughter for who she is." This is, again, a 22-year downward departure. The DOJ was requesting a 30-year sentence for the attempted assassination of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and this individual only got 8 years. This is just yet another instance of woke nonsense infiltrating the justice system and these judges. So let's welcome in Mike Donnelly, who is an attorney, and you can follow him at Donnelly Speaks on X. And Mike, you know, this is a really alarming commentary and justification from a judge to say that somehow, you know, this ultimately was good because this led the family to have to accept transgender nonsense. What do you make of it?
Well, Jenna, it is profoundly troubling, and good morning to you and everyone who's listening this morning. And we live in the brave new world of the left's creation, and this is just another example of it. You know, 8 years for what the judge admitted was domestic terrorism is profoundly troubling. You know, this individual purchased a gun, ammunition, stowed it in checked baggage, flew across the country, had zip ties, planned to burgle not just Justice Kavanaugh's house, but other justices' homes and shoot them, kill them, confessed this to the police. And this judge is saying we're going to depart from the sentencing guidelines by 20-some years and justifies it on the basis of, well, this is a mentally ill person, and boy, I'm glad that this terrible quote-unquote infraction has helped the family grapple with this person's quote-unquote gender identity. What? No.
Yeah. I mean, what is really the key here? Because, you know, it seems that the judge is completely glossing over the criminal act itself and is going directly to, you know, this whole leftist mentality that if you are part of the LGBTQ IAA plus whatever mafia, that in and of itself justifies your status as a victim and therefore justifies any actions taken in furtherance of your victimization. I mean, that's really what the judge is saying here, that this was in a sense justified because the family refused to accept this person as transgender. And so the outcome here was relatively okay and worthy of a downgrade of 22 years on that basis.
Right. So we don't hold people accountable for their actions. That's what the judge is saying. And that's very, very troubling. And that's why I think it's appropriate for the Justice Department to appeal, which is unusual when a judge sentences someone who has confessed, and this was a guilty plea, or this is a plea deal, and the prosecutors sought 30 years, the defense attorneys had asked for 8, And the judge gave the defense attorneys what they wanted. So the Justice Department is appealing. Pam Bondi has approved that, which is required when you appeal a sentence in federal court like this. And I think there's very good reason to think that an appeals court will set this aside and send it back to the judge, which is what happens when an appeals court sets it aside. We'll send it back to the judge for resentencing because, you know, the judge has to, when sentencing someone for a federal crime, it has to be reasonable and justified if they're going to depart from the sentencing guidelines. And there are factors that can be considered, but the prosecution has a lot of factors, I think, to bring to the favor. First of all, this was an assassination attempt on a Supreme Court justice in light of Dobbs. Right. That's what this person said. They were afraid that this was even before the decision was released. They were afraid that the court was going to get rid of abortion and that they were going to overturn same-sex marriage. That's what this person said they were afraid of happening. And they wanted to kill Kavanaugh in order to influence a political outcome. That cannot be allowed. We cannot allow that. And a message needs to be sent that this kind of behavior is completely acceptable. And will be dealt with partially. Okay, if this had been swiftly done and this person had received a 30-year sentence, would that have had an impact on the Kirk killer? Maybe not, which goes back to the bigger problem we have in our country, which is we're living in the left's brave new world, created by an education system that allows this, that hides the truth from parents, a society through the media that buys into the her pronouns. And I was looking at the news coverage on this, Jenna. I mean, you read it. I mean, The Guardian literally says in its headline, woman convicted in this case. You know, when we have major media calling men women, we are living out Isaiah 5:20, right? Isaiah 5:20, Isaiah's prophesying to the people of Israel saying, you have left the Lord your God. Woe unto those who call good evil and those who call darkness light. And so we've got a big task ahead of us to turn that around.
Yeah, well said. And I'm speaking with Micah Donnelly, who is a constitutionalist. He's opinionated, as you have seen, and also according to his Twitter bio, which you can read, or X bio, at Donnelly Speaks. And, you know, there definitely is a double standard when we're talking about how the media, but then also the actual authorities that are in place in the judiciary and elsewhere that are allowing and justifying literally it seems like almost anything from the attempted assassination of a Supreme Court justice to the actual assassination of a conservative Christian evangelist that is and was Charlie Kirk. And they're giving all of these things a pass. And I hope that the Utah court will impose the death penalty against Charlie Kirk's assassin. But we're seeing that those authorities need to actually enforce justice against evildoers. And then meanwhile, the authorities that are in place in several states, including my former home state of Colorado, and is it any wonder that I moved to Florida when you hear about this next case? Meanwhile, there is a censorship against counselors and licensed therapists in Colorado that they cannot counsel toward actually protecting your true gender and the gender of your birth. And so the United States Supreme Court tomorrow will hear a case challenging the legality of Colorado's ban on, as Newsweek puts it, LGBTQ plus conversion therapy. Of course, they're putting that, you know, in the negative as if this is some kind of harsh thing. But really, this is just counseling according to reality and the natural state of man and woman. And this really matters because more than 20 states have banned this kind of reality counseling and have basically censored, contrary to not only the First Amendment, but also just the laws of nature and of nature's God, they have censored therapists from actually providing the help that clearly individuals, you know, like Kavanaugh's attempted assassin, probably clearly need. So what do you think the Supreme Court is set to do in this case? And they'll hear oral arguments tomorrow. This is Childs versus Salazar.
this is a very interesting case, a very important case. And, you know, it puts the state's authority to regulate so-called health practices and medical practices, which the states do have. The Constitution does not give a lot of authority to the federal government in this area. And we want states to have authority to regulate in their states. So this puts the state against, the First Amendment of the Constitution in the context of counseling. And, you know, counselors should have a right to speak. But when you're talking about counseling, right, you sort of are getting into this area of medical practicing. And so that's where this challenge comes in. Jenna, to me, this terminology reflects the battle that we're in. Conversion therapy ban. Think about that for a minute. What the left means when they say that, what the advocates of this transgender movement mean when they say that is, if you have a boy who says he's a girl, okay, and the parents want to take that boy to a counselor to help him think through, you know, his challenges, his confusion, okay, the left says, oh, that's conversion therapy, meaning they're assuming that it's converting the girl back to being a boy. And they say, oh, you can't do that. You can't convert a girl back to a boy through therapy. That's harmful. That's insane. I'm so glad you use the term reality counseling, because that is what we're talking about here. And of course, counselors should be able to do that. I mean, this is about parents bringing children. This is about kids to counselors who need help. And the state of Colorado wants to say, oh, no, you can't do that. You know, they use the term gender affirming care to talk about the kind of quote unquote treatment and procedures that they want to do to young children to support them in their gender dysphoria, their confusion, giving them medicines, puberty blockers, surgical procedures that cut them and deform them and harm them for life, which we're now seeing as so many people who have been through this are now realizing that they have unalterably harmed themselves and they have the very deep regret. You know, it's one thing if you're a homosexual, right, and you suddenly realize, oh, no, that was not a good thing. I'm going back. You know, you may have had some issues related to that, but you haven't cut off parts of your body which can never be repaired. That's one of the problems with this transgender movement, is they are going in that direction and targeting children with it. So I think the Supreme Court is going to have an interesting case. If people can listen to it, they can go to the Supreme Court website and listen to it. I plan to. It's going to be interesting to see what the justices say about it. I do think that this court will uphold the counselor's right to provide this kind of treatment. I hope they will. That would be a win for reality and for sanity.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jim Campbell, who's the chief legal counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom, was quoted in Newsweek as saying, Colorado's law harms these young people by depriving them of care, caring and compassionate conversations with a counselor who helps them pursue the goals they desire. And I think that's true. But even more than that, this is depriving counselors of acknowledging reality. And how can we expect any sort of medical treatment or help, including necessary mental health counseling or counseling in general, if a counselor isn't able to simply acknowledge the biological reality of immutable characteristics? I mean, this would be like somebody coming and saying, I want to fly, I don't believe in gravity, and a licensed counselor isn't able to say, well, that's contrary to the laws of nature. You can't physically do that. That's not reality. We need to get you some help for this. I mean, it literally prevents the counselor from speaking the truth, not just a viewpoint. And that's what's insane to me about this whole entire conversation, and the fact that this is banned in 20 states, is that in no other circumstances except the LGBTQ nonsense would a medical professional be unable to acknowledge biological reality. I mean, imagine if a surgeon were not able to acknowledge the reality of, you know, where the heart is located or some other fact about biology. I mean, they couldn't do their job effectively, and it would result in actual harm to their patient. That's literally what's going on here. So, you know, last minute or so, Mike Donnelly, I mean, do you think that we'll hear, you know, some sanity, at least from the conservative members of the court?
Yes. Yes, we will. We will hear some sanity. We will hear some good questions. And this loops back to the Nicholas Roski case, because he came from California where they have one of these bans. And imagine if that young man had been able to get the help he needed that his parents probably wanted to provide him. Would he have traveled across the country to attempt to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh if he'd been able to get the help he needed? Probably not, or possibly not. So this is a very important case, Jenna. Thank you for making that point. It's reality counseling, and medical professionals need to be able to do that, and the Supreme Court needs to uphold or needs to reverse this law in Colorado.
Yeah, and they can't just, I mean, our justice system cannot just be based on an ideology and a viewpoint that is separate from reality. This is why the Christian worldview, I mean, when we say we're a Christian nation, this is what we mean, not that we are imposing our belief system on someone else. It's that we're all acknowledging reality and then building up our law and our system of government and our policy and all of that from there. The left denies reality. And that is having actual harmful consequences, not only on patients, but also now on other people who are victims of this ideology, like Charlie Kirk. So, Mike Donnelly, really appreciate it. We'll cover this more tomorrow, this important Supreme Court case. As always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.